Good afternoon, Muskegon. Hi, it's that time for Torn Into Your Show for news, information, and more for this September 23rd, 2022. 58 degrees, sunny, a beautiful day for a football game. Alumni from Muskegon, welcome back in town. I will see you on the field tonight. Listen, if you're driving and you don't get a chance to see the show, and would like to review the show, or if you're watching and would like to watch it again, the show repeats itself on WVS 103.7 The Beat and M106. So if you'd like to get in on the questions, please make sure that you are either on 103.7 or M106. A couple things to mention is Nationals Suicide Prevention Month, that which should be every month. Make sure that you keep your eyes on people. Remember, don't have a face. So don't be looking for different things. Look for the symptoms and signs. And we're going to get people back on to talk about suicide because the numbers are ridiculous. Also, it's National Hispanic Heritage Month. We want to, you know, celebrate our brothers. Hispanic brothers, so don't forget about that. Don't forget there's an outreach at Hackley Park tomorrow, the 23rd as well, okay? My host is back, Pastor Melvin C. Burns. How you doing, sir? You had COVID.
Yes, sir. It's good to be back. I'm feeling much better. But yeah, man, I had a couple of rough days in there, brother.
Okay, so please, people, another announcement. Please remember that COVID is still running wild. Be careful out there. Yeah. We got to get right into it. It is season for politics, as you know. Yes. You need to get out and vote, register, get your ballot, whatever you need to do for November the 8th. It is a huge election. We're going to go, here's some rules. We're going to go and try to contact every person that we can on both sides of the ballot. This is the one thing that I want to say. My producer, director, Janae, when she calls you, if she is treated rudely, if she's treated rudely, we are trying to give people equal time. And we are more than fair on this show of letting people express their views. But we are not the enemy, and she is not to be treated that way. So with that said, we don't have to worry about that with this person right here. He has served in the 92nd district. He has been on the show many times, and we got to get right to him. As Fred Hammond would say, put your hands together for Representative Terry J. Sable. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. I'm glad that you got that car still and not moving.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. It's definitely dangerous when you're trying to do this and driving. So I just find a parking spot real quick and do it that way.
Thank you for doing that, sir. I appreciate that because we don't want you driving. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay.
How's the election going?
You know, I think it's going great. You know, I have been I've been hard at it, really, quite frankly, since the first of the year. And then things really started picking up for me anyways in the campaign. And in about April, when I started knocking on doors, the snow melted. So I started knocking on doors, and I've been knocking on doors and trying to contact voters ever since. And I got a funny feeling that before I'm done, that there's going to be snow back in the air again, just like it started.
Wow. Pastor Melvin Burns, first question to you.
Terry, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you, sir?
Good. It's good to see you.
Hey, good to see you. I'm glad to hear you're on the mend from COVID. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm back at it now. Hey, it's good to see you. Hey, first question. I was looking. Tell us, you're running for 32nd district.
Yeah.
Tell folks, and this is a little different area for you. Tell folks what all that district covers, and then tell us a little bit about some new folks are getting to know you that previously weren't in your district. Correct.
Yeah, you know, so the new district now for the state Senate is basically most of Muskegon County. It does not include Ravana, Moreland, or Casanova, way out on the east end of the county. So it's most of Muskegon County, all of Oceana County to the north. So like Hart, Shelby, Pentwater, those areas. Okay. And then we have Mason County, which has Scottville and Ludington. Mm-hmm. And then we have the western half of Manistee County, which is the city of Manistee, where the casino is at also. And then all the way north to Benzie County, which is the Frankfurt area. So when I leave my house and start driving, I can drive for 2 hours, and I'm still in the district yet.
Wow.
A very diverse district.
It really is. Yes, it really is. You know, we, you know, that's, I think that's just the best way to explain it. Very diverse. And that's okay with me because, you know, that's how I've really lived my life, in a very diverse way, being from the small community like Ravana, which is very, very small, very rural. And then working in Muskegon Heights for 25 years. And then now, of course, serving in the state house. So, diversity is the name of the game for me. That's what we need to have more of, in my opinion.
I'm going to steal Pastor Melvin Burns' question.
Uh-oh.
No, actually, Terry, let's talk about your 92nd experience first.
Sure.
And then let's get into a little history about you. That would be Melvin's question. And then let's talk about some of your accomplishments in the 92nd. So who were you?
Yeah, you know, I was from Ravana, and then I was fortunate enough to get hired by the city of Muskegon Heights in 1991 when I came out of the military. And I was very fortunate to have that opportunity, and always felt very loyal to the city of Muskegon Heights for what they did for me to become a police officer in the city. And then I worked 7 years then full time. And then I got this idea that I wanted to get out of police work and go to the fire department. So the city, once again, city of Muskegon Heights stepped up and gave me that opportunity. And I went over to the fire department and served another 18 years of full-time work there. And then I still did some part-time police work during that time in the other areas of the county. But, you know, I had this little political bug going, and I decided I just really wanted to be involved and I wanted to have a seat at the table. So I ran for county commissioner back in 2012, and I won that race and then won my election in 14, and then was elected into the state house in 2016. So definitely a long time here in Muskegon County. Well, my whole life has been in Muskegon County. And, you know, just I've been very fortunate to be able to represent the community that I care deeply about, which is Muskegon Heights, because of what everything that they've done for me over the years. And to be able to serve home is really a tremendous feeling, quite frankly. And I think we've had a lot of accomplishments, especially serving in the political minority, where it's very difficult to get things done. But we've been able to secure some funding, you know, right off the top of my head for, you know, we had the funding for Sherman Boulevard a couple of years ago when we got that resurfaced, reconstructed, really. And then we've had some more success in the downtown area of Muskegon. And their redevelopment, we brought in quite a bit of money for that. But also we've been able to maintain some very vital programming in Muskegon County as well. So I take a lot of pride in having some of the successes that we've had. And I look forward to many more, quite frankly, going forward, whether I'm in the minority or in the political majority. That would be the way to get things done.
First question coming up, Pastor Melvin Burns, go ahead.
From Marianne Zooks, right?
Yep.
First off, let's let the people know about our hometown homegrown hero that has been there for all of Muskegon and Heights and everyone in between. She called you a hero, Terry.
And then second thing. Well,
there's more. He continues to give back, even volunteering his time to serve the people that attend parties in the park for fundraising efforts for local nonprofits like Disability Network and many more.
Thank you, Marianne. Been a while. Go ahead.
Well, that's awful nice of Marianne to say that. I don't know if I consider myself a hero, but, you know, it is all about being a part of community. And to be a part of community, in my opinion, you have to serve your community. And I feel like that's what I've done, and I'll continue to do it no matter what. But to me, it's about giving back, and, you know, like I said earlier, you know, Muskegon Heights gave me an opportunity, and I've always felt loyal to the city there, and I give in many different ways. I've actually been a member of the Muskegon Heights Optimist Club for, probably 25, 26 years now, I think it is. So that's just one of the organizations that I'm a part of, but it just gives me a lot of satisfaction to be able to give back.
Let's get to the meat and potatoes of it. What are the things that you're hearing? There's another question, Melvin. What are some of the things that you're hearing out in there when you're knocking at doors?
Well, you mean some of the issues that are we're hearing? Well, you know, I think one of them is the reproductive rights issue, you know, with, you know, huge. Women's. Man, I'll tell you, that is something I hear an awful lot of. And I'm somebody who really feels strongly about, you know, being a pro-choice person. You know, it's, to me, there's a couple different issues going on there, though. One is, you know, people's opinions about abortion. That's one thing. But then to me, it comes back more to, you know, just women having the right to make their healthcare decisions with their doctor. I just don't think that's a role of government to get involved in. And I think the best thing for me to do in something like that is to get the heck out of the way and let a woman make her own decisions, you know, based on the advice she's getting with her doctor. And so, you know, that is something that I hear very much of on the doors. Another issue is inflation. I mean, you know, we all see the high cost of everything right now. And so I think the more ways that we can work to find some solutions to that, I don't know if we can find solutions to actually lower prices on anything, but I think what we can do is find ways for people to actually save more money and have more money in their pockets instead of having to, you know, pay into other things. So the more we can do that, the more we got the actual people in mind when it comes to inflation, the better off I think we are.
Terry, explain to people that when it comes down to inflation, that after closing the country down basically and reopening, that some of this stuff was bound to happen. Now, the gas at the gas pump, I think a little bit has to do with greed or boardrooms, definitely. But this inflation and lack of work and workers and product needed, some of that was bound to happen. That's not anybody's fault. That was bound to happen.
Yeah, I don't see it falling on anybody's shoulders in particular. I mean, I think it's just a cycle that we go through, you know, as a country. It's been that way before. And this is one of those times where it's tough times. And, you know, tough times call for us to, you know, I call for unity in those times. And when we can, you know, work together to try to find some solutions to help people get through these tough times, that's a big deal. And that's one of the things that I strive for.
How hard is it that people are so dug in partisan wise to reach and get those solutions?
It's very difficult. Very difficult when we have the partisan divide like we do nowadays. It makes it very, very difficult, and we need to find ways to get around that, because we're not getting anywhere like this when we, you know, we use some of these problems, people's problems, we use it as a political advantage, and that's just wrong. And I don't care what party it is that you know, you affiliate yourself with. If you're doing that and you're using, you know, those types of issues where you're not helping people and you're actually maintaining a problem in order to use it as a political advantage, that's just wrong. And we need to do better, because quite frankly, I think our country depends on it.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Burns.
Okay. Terry, you know, I was surprised to see this the other day. Some of your accounts, I don't know if it was on Facebook or something, and there was some group that was opposed to you, and they said because he didn't get the casino to Muskegon. I was just kind of surprised to see that. So I know you can still get this question. One, is the casino issue completely dead?
Yeah, I'll start with the latter part first. I don't think it is completely dead. I think that there is still some conversations happening. And I will say I'm not part of those conversations, so I think it's on a much different level than what I'm on. But you know, so I haven't given up hope. I think that there's something stirring out there still, and I guess, you know, time will tell on how that all plays out. But I want to be very, very clear about that casino. You know, there was, you know, some things that I'm going to be as nice as I can here. So there was some things that came out here recently through some text messages and through a political mailer that were a complete lie in regards to my support for the casino. And it's very unfortunate that that had to happen. I'm very disappointed, actually, because I have been a very big supporter of the casino from the time that I got onto the county commission in 2012. And what's crazy about it is that, you know, I have had personal conversations with the governor, with her staff, and don't get me wrong, I'm extremely disappointed in her decision. I don't agree with her decision. But there's been numerous news stories on it that have shown my support. I mean, I've lost track, and I know that even as a county commissioner, we did a couple of resolutions in support of it. I don't know what more I could have done to convince the governor that we needed that casino here. Mm-hmm. So any talk of me not supporting a casino is just a flat out lie, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, now they're attacking you with, and you're going to have to explain this with our audience about internet access. What is that all about?
You know, that's a new one to me, but I had not heard that that latest attack. I will just simply say that it is campaign season, and there's a lot of stuff flying around. I'm amazed at how much money that's being spent against me in this campaign. But you know, I just can't stress enough for people to not simply just read the headlines, but make sure you read the whole story. Make sure you do your research and find out what really is going on. Because I have seen some outlandish things coming out there and
coming from everywhere.
I guess Joe Biden and I have been colluding on inflation and all just craziness. But you know, I just can't stress enough. Make sure, you know, folks know what they're really hearing and what's going on. So, and if you ever have a question about something, you know, my website, votesabo.com is there. Shoot me a message and, I'll be happy to answer any questions that come out. And many people have my personal cell phone number that I've had for 20 some years. Just feel free to shoot me a text or call me and we'll get it. I'll give you the answer. And it may not be the answer you want to hear, but I'm going to give you the answer on how I feel.
Let's go back to the board. Question, Pastor Burns.
From Marianne, she says, the casino will prevail because our proud Native population will not give up, period. Terry supported it and is too proper and polite, but I will call out John Bumstead for the slander he's trying to give out. John has proven the first part of his last name applies.
One more thing from Marianne Zutz.
Marianne also says, ask Pastor Burns, it's been proven that the devil attacks harder those that are on the right path.
Right. Marianne, you just preaching today.
I know. I'm going to take some notes for Sunday. Yeah.
Terry, now this 32nd district,
yeah.
What do you feel are the top things that are needed for this whole entire area in this state?
Well, I think housing is another issue that I hear a lot on the doors, you know, in various parts of the community. And it isn't just, you know, just in one particular area. It is something that is I hear about throughout the district, whether it be, you know, in Muskegon Heights or in Manistee or even in Frankfort, any place is the issue with affordable, attainable housing. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to continue that work to try to improve that, the housing stock for people who are, you know, maybe their starter homes or for anybody, quite frankly, who is looking to purchase a home. It's become so crazily priced in the housing market that it's very difficult for people to, number one, find homes, but then also, you know, find them at an affordable price. But also when we talk about housing, we talk about rent control, you know, and I don't think people should live for free in a house. So that's not what I'm saying. But I just think that there should be some caps on it, you know, to maintain, that can maintain what people in the area can afford. And so that's why I was really happy to be a part of a bipartisan bill package this past year that addresses many of those housing issues. And, you know, my bill, which was an identical bill on the Senate side, has already passed. It already has passed the Senate and has come back to the House, and as have some of the other bills in that package. And, you know, I just think that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people working together to solve some of these problems that we have. And housing is one of them. Internet access is another big deal, especially when you get out in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Where people just, they don't have internet connection. As a matter of fact, where I'm over in Eggleston Township right now, and I went to jump on this call, and, you know, it is not even really rural, but it is, you know, it's a little bit farther out of town. And mm-hmm. The first place I stopped at, I had a terrible connection, and I was like, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm only there temporarily. I mean, I can't imagine living in this spot where you have to, you know, maybe kids have to do some of their schoolwork online, or people are trying to work from home. I mean, there's so many facets that the internet access, you know, really, we depend on that access.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of how we, when we talk about internet, how we think about it. I mean, you know, is it not necessarily in the same level of public utility, or do we need to start thinking of it more like that? That you pretty much have to have it in every household.
You know, that is a fantastic question. And yes, I think we're kind of headed towards that direction because, you know, the price of internet is really going higher and higher. And it's becoming more and more a part of each and every one of our daily lives in one way, shape or form. And I think we really need to start looking at it like it's, you know, potentially could be that a public utility like our gas bills, our electric bills, where there is some regulation on it. Because right now it's, you know, it's pretty wide open market.
When you figure out that a lot of our kids right now are going to school by their internet and don't have access to it, that we have to come to some solution to give them access so they can do their schoolwork.
Yeah, I heard when I was talking to a group of people way up in Ludington, you know, I was talking to them about some of the issues, and one of the issues was this internet access for kids to do their schoolwork. And they were telling me that, you know, when COVID was going on and the kids were having to do their schoolwork or their school assignments from home, which is becoming more and more common even after COVID, that a lot of these kids, because they live in the rural areas, they would have to come into town and sit outside of a McDonald's or something like that where there was public access to Wi-Fi just to do their schoolwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, what are we doing to our kids? I mean, that's terrible. And I don't care if you're in Muskegon Heights, Muskegon, Ludington, wherever, that's wrong. And we got to make sure that we do a better job of making sure that our kids have the resources that they need to do their schoolwork, to become better educated. And internet access is, I think, is getting up there close to the top of the list.
What are some of the differences between you and the person that you're running against?
First thing that comes to mind is home. This is my home, always has been, always will be. And, you know, I am the one who you're going to run into at, you know, the grocery store, wherever the hardware store. You're going to see me at Rowan Park, you know, anywhere. You're going to see me around in the community volunteering or just being a part of different things. Or just living my daily life, whereas, you know, I believe my opponent still lives in Newaygo County, which is not part of the district, and he's got a one-bedroom apartment in North Muskegon that he rents to, in order to say that he lives here. But I think that's one of the bigger differences, and I really believe, too, that when you look at, you know, what we stand for when it comes to, you know, reproductive rights for women and their rights, I think there's a big difference there. There is a big difference when it comes to voting issues and how we all feel about voting. Mm-hmm. I want to try to make it easier for people to vote, and encourage people to vote. You know, unfortunately, my opponent has a different feeling on that. He thinks that there should be some other restrictions on voting, and so those are some of the glaring differences that I see.
Going back to the board again, Pastor Burns.
Marianne says, LOL, biggest difference is he's from here and cares about here, and he's honest about what he says and does, and honest about what's not, and honest about what's not something he can do.
Okay, back to you, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, again, I, you know, there's something to be said, I think, about, you know, knowing somebody, truly knowing them. Mm-hmm. And I've been around this community for my entire life. And, you know, and that's one of the nice things I really enjoy doing is the door-to-door thing. And it doesn't matter if I'm in Muskegon or wherever I'm at, around Muskegon County especially, when I'm going door to door and I start talking to people and I realize what their last name is, and then I start connecting the dots about this person and that person and who used to live there. And, you know, it's kind of fun. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to be able to do that unless you've been around here for a long, long time. And it's one of the things that I really enjoy is just, you know, being a part of the community and all the good things that we got going on. You know, and, you know, really all the things that we've had that haven't went in our direction, but I want to be a part of it. Whether it be, enjoying the good times or trying to fix the bad times. And, you know, I'm going to continue to do it no matter what. That's what I'm here for. That's being a part of community.
All right. Yeah. You got a couple minutes to give that shameless plug. Why people should vote for you and how to contact you and find out more information.
Well, I probably already hit it pretty hard, you know, as far as, you know, why people should vote for me, because, you know, I am part of this community, always have been, always will be. And I try to remain as accessible as possible. And, you know, that's just who I am. And, you know, I enjoy trying to help people and navigate through their state government, even on some of the local issues when it comes down to like unemployment issues, those types of things that are directly affecting people. And I want to continue to do that. And that's why I'm running for this position. And if people want to learn more or contact me, again, votesabo.com, or our Facebook page is Terry J. Sabo for State Senate. And I'm on Twitter as well, so under the State Senate. So so I look forward again continuing to represent this community. And I really look forward to your being on your program again, because you guys do such a good job with this. I really like it. I think it's a big asset to the community.
You will be back on our show again, friend. Thanks a lot, and good luck. And we will see you soon.
That sounds great. And good to see both of you again.
You too. Right. Take care, Terry.
Take care.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That was Representative Terry Sabo. We got to go to get some commercials ready at the bottom of the hour. Next up, running for the 14th Circuit Court, is Jenny McNeil. And she will be up in a couple of seconds. Great interview. We are looking for, let's go to board. Mike Anthony Smith from Houston, Texas says, good guy. Okay. So listen, we are looking for the opponents to come to. I think that we have an in with Bumstead to see what his side of the story. We would love to hear other people on the other side, what they have to say. But the thing is that we're going to try to reach you. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. So hopefully you will want to get your opinion out. With that said, this is Turning to the Bottom of the Hour for September 23rd, 2002. Homecoming weekend, 59 degrees. We're going to go to commercial, back with Jenny McNeil. This is the time we run the commercial. maybe not. Maybe we'll just go. Okay, we're just gonna roll. All right. You know, this is live stuff going on, and so things happen. All right. There is a seat up. It's the 14th Circuit Court. This woman is no stranger to the show. She's been on before. We really appreciate her taking her time. It's a different position. It's not a Democrat or a Republican. It's a nonpartisan job shit. And I'll let her talk about that a little bit. Put your hands together for Miss Jenny McNeil. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Good to see you.
Highly favored. Better than we deserve. How are you doing? And thank you for getting on the show right away.
Of course. Of course. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate you having all the candidates on. I think people need to know about us. And this is a great way to get the word out.
Great thing about that is we try our best to get everybody on. The bad thing is not everybody takes that opportunity. Good people like yourself do. Thank you very much. Jenny, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been an attorney for over 25 years. Started out as a legal aid attorney and then went into private practice. I worked for Lattice Hoops McNeil, was my in private practice for about 10 years. And then about 5 years ago, I started with the court as a family court referee. So I currently do hearings for the juveniles that commit crimes. We do the allegedly commit crimes. How's that? I do the neglect and abuse cases, and I do custody, parenting time, child support. So I have a full docket. I have run hearings every day. So it's been a great job, a great experience. And I think it's really been really learned a lot of how the court system works. I think that's what's missing from a lot of people who want to be a judge. They don't understand how things work. So I think I have a good understanding of that, and I'm ready to be a judge. Also pretty involved in the community. I would say very involved in the community. I'm on several boards. I'm on the board of Legal Aid of Western Michigan. Kind of, they say, once a legal aider, always a legal aider. I'm also on the board of Muskegon Family Care. Very excited at the direction that agency is going. Real important to the community. And involved with the Michigan Irish Music Festival. And then I'm just a lot of other agencies that I'm involved in. I was on the board of Every Woman's Place for 18 years. I chaired the Muskegon County Domestic Violence Task Force. So just really, I feel pretty strongly as a member of this community that it's my responsibility to be involved and give back. Also try to raise my children in that same vein. I've been married for 25 years to my husband, Kevin, and I have two boys that are flown the coop a little bit. Both of them graduated from Mona Shores, and my youngest is at Grand Valley, just left. So that's been an interesting transition. But I'm also excited because I think I've really taught them the value of giving back to the community, that it's our job, like as members of the society of this community, to be a part of it and to give a piece of ourselves to it. So that's a little bit about me in a nutshell.
Pastor Burns.
I'm going to ask you something a little bit different. It's good. I think last time we talked, you were in a big field of primary, but you talked about your sense of giving back to community. Where does that come from?
I think a lot of that comes from my parents. My parents are just good people. They actually, it's kind of fun for me. I was raised moved around a little bit when I was young, but raised in Mason, Michigan, which is just outside of Lansing. And so I moved here, you know, after I graduated law school. And they really instilled in me the importance of that. My dad was always involved. My dad, you know, a little bit in politics, kind of putting up signs for politicians way back when. And, you know, he was a member of different clubs, whether it's the Lions Club, United Way. My parents are what taught me that's important. It's important to give back.
Jenny, I want to say that in a race that I'm not going to go there, but it's been a lot of mudslinging, but you have maintained yourself to stay positive. Talk a little bit about that.
That's right. I think that it's important in a judicial race that it not have the mudslinging that happens in partisan races. Actually, I wish it didn't occur in partisan races, but I think it's important. You know, judicial officers are held to a higher standard. Our job is not to kind of throw dirt at each other or get involved in that, but basically to talk about who we are. And so I've really tried to focus on my integrity and what I bring what I would bring to the bench, because I think that's what's important. Because in the end of the day, one person gets elected and that person is going to be sitting in that seat. And you want a person that has integrity and has the values that we want in somebody that makes decisions. You know, when we think about, I saw you had Terry Sabo on, when we think about, you know, our senators or our state representatives, you have a whole group of people making decisions, right? You know, they vote, right. You know, judges, it's one person. Mm-hmm. One person that sits up there. Now, yes, you can appeal, but that's costly and not very realistic. So you really want that one person to really be a good person, mm-hmm. not only in the sense of having integrity, but also having the experience and the knowledge to do a good job. I think mm-hmm. that Muskegon County deserves that.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Burns.
Okay. So, well, let me ask you this first. So you're running for circuit court, just nonpartisan.
Right.
So after you tell people that you have that to do with some of the issues I see on the news every day, what are the main things you hear from people as you're on the campaign trail?
Oh, that's interesting. It depends on the person. It really does. I just got done. I was out knocking doors this afternoon. And so it's interesting. People are very excited to talk to me. Like, that's what I find very, they like the fact that I'm knocking on their door and mm-hmm. that I want to engage with them. That's what I think, number one. They like that. They really like it. For the most part, there are some people who just, they're not going to answer the door no matter who's there. But
especially with you wearing the color blue.
You can see them in the window hiding.
Yep. So, I see a huge relief on people's face when I say that it's a nonpartisan position. People, I see a sense of people are really exhausted by the partisanship. That's the one thing I see that a lot.
That's people ask.
Yep. People ask me, they want to know my position on issues, which I'm like, you know, we can't. You know, I can't give you what you want to know. Okay. They want to know, are you pro-choice? Are you pro-life? Also, the most interesting one I've had a lot lately is I get asked this. People are like, well, are you willing to put people in jail? And I thought, wow, this is interesting. So it's, you know, it's interesting. I would say people, there isn't one thing I see. It's just people are all over the board. The only thing I see a lot of people kind of exhausted with the partisanship. That would be the most thing. But still, and I also get a number of people who don't believe me when I say I'm nonpartisan. No, you're not. I said, well, when you go look at the ballot, like look at the back of the ballot, there's going to be no R and no D. Like, it's nonpartisan. Oh, you have to belong to a party. Well, I don't. And I'm really happy because I have support. That's one thing I tell people. I have support from people on both sides of the aisle. I've got Republicans and Democrats that are supporting me and independents. And even more so over the last month or so, gotten more support. So I really, you know, it's a tough time. Politics are tough. I give anyone credit for being willing to put their hat in the race, in any race, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot mm-hmm. of work, and it's a tough crowd out there.
Crowd. You have to read the room out there. It's tough. People don't understand that when it comes down to the integrity thing that you were saying about having an RD by your name, we take this, and I take this so seriously that I don't have an R or D behind my name because I want to make sure that you get, when we interview people, that we hear both sides, that it's right down the middle. So I won't do that. That's my dedication to making sure that people hear both sides. And I think that's important.
And I get on both parties' mailing list just so I can get information. So if you see my name out there, I don't support candidates during this time of year, but I do get on both mailing lists because I like to see the stuff they send out. And the phone and the robocalls just to keep up.
Oh my gosh, I'm blocking the robocalls. Okay.
Or the text messages.
Oh my goodness.
I get calls from both sides. I get requests for money. So if you ever hear that, that's what I do, folks. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that we talked about last time you were on is your dedication to youth.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I just, that's the one thing once I started as a referee, kind of really dug into the issue, because I see that we were having a lot of youth coming across our paths, which I wish they wouldn't. I think we have, especially this summer, I've seen a lot of guns in the community. I think, mm-hmm. you know, we got a tie in with some drug issues probably there too, but the guns make me very nervous. Cause usually that ends up bad in one of several ways. Somebody ends up, you know, injured or dead. And then the other party ends, the person who shoots ends up, you know, incarcerated for the rest of their life. So that to me, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And how can we do it better? And I think our whole court, Judge Pittman, our probation team really kind of focused in on that. How are we doing this better? I think we got sort of waylaid by COVID, but I'm really hoping kind of coming out of a lot of that we can make things even better. I don't know if any of you saw, it's the Michigan Youth Violence Prevention Center. Have you heard of, either of you heard of that?
No.
They're kind of, you guys should check that out. They're coming, they came and did a lunch meeting. I think it was it last week, trying to bring people together. And I really enjoyed that. It was basically, they called it a listening session, kind of bringing people from the community together. You know, our police chief was there, and even the Muskegon police chief, and people, a lot of us from the court and just the community. And I really, their goal is really about trying to get the youth involved to try to help them come up with the solutions. And I thought it's a really interesting group. And I really hope that they can kind of dig in and help us. Cause I think they have a good point here. You know, it's one thing when I sit there and tell a kid what to do. But if we can get the kids involved and we can make things better, from their perspective, and maybe we've got, maybe we can fix some of the broken systems that we have. Cause mm-hmm. I that's like the worst part of my job is putting, you know, locking a kid up. I don't like doing that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I won't do it. Doesn't mean I haven't done it, but I don't like it. I'd like to find any other way, to get the guns out of their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty passionate about that. I'm always looking at ways that how we can make it better. Who can we partner with? Who do we talk to? Who do we, you know, what do we do? I'm open for anything. And that's one of the things that I think that I bring to the table is my involvement in the community. Like I think I told you guys this last time, and kind of connecting people. I met a woman who was needing help with community service. Mm-hmm. So I hook her up with our probation staff, and now we've got kids out there not only cleaning up our lake, you know, which needs some help, but also learning. Like they got to go kayaking this summer and kind of be out in the water. Some of these kids had never seen the water or been mm-hmm. on the water. So I mean, really trying to engage the community, because I feel pretty strongly, no matter what the issue is, whether it's youth violence or domestic violence or violence in general, I think we have to get the community engaged mm-hmm. in order to solve some of those problems. So I feel pretty strongly about that.
Very, very true that we got to get the community involved in solving these crimes. Question to Melvin Burns.
So Jenny, let's say we're a year from now, you're wearing the black robe, everything's turned out well. What should people expect when they come into your courtroom?
They should expect that they're going to be treated with dignity and respect. They should expect that I will be prepared. I do it now. I read everything, you know, before people come to me, that I will be prepared, that I know the law, and that I will make decisions based on the law. Mm-hmm. That it's not what I feel or how things are going that day. It's about what the law is and applying the law to the facts every single time, to apply them fairly with some empathy and with knowledge. I think that's what people are going to get out of me every single time, because that's already what they get out of me now, is trying to be fair and to make the best decision possible every time. And to listen. I think a lot of people don't feel heard.
There you go. So, there you go.
So listening is really, really important.
Jenny, you've talked about the solutions with our youth and being what things would happen as you being a judge. What are some of the other things that you feel that is needed at the courthouse?
The courthouse? Well, one of the things I need, it's I think we really need a stronger self-help clinic. We other counties have some pretty awesome kind of clinics where people, because we have a lot of people who are representing themselves in all sorts of issues. And so they can't afford an attorney. And they're not going to, I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, the ideal thing would everybody would walk in with an attorney and, you know, everybody would have that. So that's not realistic. So I think we really need to invest in a stronger self-help clinic. We have, you know, we have pieces of it in the cross, you know, they have computers they can go and look at, but I'm really envious of the Kent County model. They have this incredible program, even the Ottawa County. So I would like to see us bring that here. I think that's, that would be really, really a neat thing. I'm also excited. I think we have some pretty great staff that work really hard to try innovative things. We've done, even in the family court piece of it, we just got a new grant, a domestic violence and child support grant. So I'm really kind of excited to see what my role can be in that to help us address issues. And that's the one thing I really like about a lot of the people that I work with. We really try to come up with innovative ways, whether it's, you know, sobriety court or, you know, the business court, different ways to try to address issues. And they're willing to try these things. Mm-hmm. To see, and I'm more than willing also. I don't think there's one way that things have to get done. I think we have to be willing. We certainly, if you notice, we've had to do that now. We do so much by Zoom, where I never would have guessed before that we would be doing so much from Zoom. I mean, I'm sitting at home right now. I can do a good chunk of my job from home. I never would have guessed that. And so figuring out ways to kind of allow that to happen, but still making sure that we keep, you know, we keep the courthouse open. It might be its ways. I certainly help with staff. I don't, we've lost a lot of staff to other counties because other counties pay better. Mm-hmm. And so
that's, you know, a problem. Maybe,
yep. And we might not be able to compete with that, but then maybe we can make it better by being more flexible with some of the schedules. So I think there's a lot of things. I'm always open. I always have been in the things that I've tried to do and looking at just how do we make it better? And we have to be willing to look at what we're doing and why we're doing it. I probably drive people a little crazy sometimes because when they tell me we do things because that's the way we've always done it, I'm always like, yeah, but why do we, you know, why do we do that? And do we need to do it that way? And are there better ways? Kind of bring that sort of mentality.
Especially the caseload of the district. I mean, the attorneys representing the people that don't can't afford attorneys.
Right.
Defendants.
Right. Yeah.
That caseload is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pastor Mel Burns.
So, I do want to go back to the issue, Greg. You talked about the how much of the court system recognizes that problem of people not having representation. I mean, you talk about the issue was, how was that perceived, I guess, overall?
Well, that's hard for me to say what other people think about it. I think everybody would obviously be better if they had an attorney, right? I mean, it's just, it would be, but I think it's just, it isn't reality. So I think everybody is, I don't want to speak for other people, but what I've seen is pretty much people on the same wavelength that I am, that we have a lot of self-represented litigants. Mm-hmm. And how do we serve them better? And in fact, I would say there's even trainings at different, you know, across the state about trying to deal with this. This isn't just our issue. Okay. There are a lot of folks that can't afford attorneys for a lot of different cases. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot with the family, but a lot of different cases they can't afford it. And so how do we make that better?
Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that I comes out of Judge Pittman's mouth that I love. He said, the question was, how do you act and respond when people that you know come in front of you? And this is what he said. People know me, know better that they should not come in front of me. I think that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant. If you know me, don't come in front of me. The question to you, how do you deal with people that you know?
Well, I generally, the first thing I do is disclose, because I've had this happen several times, and the rules are very clear. The first thing you do is disclose, even if it's, if it appears to be a conflict, it is a direct conflict, whatever it is, you disclose it. And so, and then from there, it just depends on what that level of, you know, is, because I mean, especially me, like, I know I've met a lot of people in this community. Does that mean I really know them? You know, are they my mm-hmm. friend? Mm-hmm. You know, what is that? What is that level? Do I just, did I just meet them at a function? Did I sit next to them at dinner one, you know, at some function 2 years ago? Or, you know, is it my next door neighbor, my best friend? So that level of what is, and I disclose that. I disclose that to the attorneys, ask them if I feel that it's not, that I'm not conflicted, or if it doesn't impact my ability to make a decision, I tell them that. And then I ask for their, you know, input. And if either one of them tells me, any of them tell me that they're not comfortable with it or their client isn't comfortable with it, then I recuse myself and kind of pass it out. And I've had both happen. I've had, you know, especially like with some of the kids, well, you know, my kids were in school. So obviously, and I, while I wasn't, you know, I'm friends with I know the superintendent. You know, my kids were there. I was very involved in the school. I helped a lot with the bond campaign, different stuff. So, you know, I just make sure everybody knew that, like, these are my connections to the school. And you know, what's this going to look like? And it would sometimes depend. So if there's going to be a witness, somebody's going to have to testify. So it would really depend on what it is. But I think disclosure is the number one thing. And then kind of, you know, kind of ferreting through, because the bottom line is, this is a, while it seems like a big county, it's a fairly small county. So you can end up recusing yourself from every case, I suppose. So it's really trying to figure out what that relationship, and if there's anything to gain out of that, you know, then you want to get out of the case. But I like Judge Pittman's answer though too.
Yeah. Jenny, explain to people that when people come in front of a judge and this, when it comes down to the sentencing, that you guys have rules that you guys have to go by when it comes down to sentencing, and that you're not just making up things.
Exactly. And with, and when you're talking about sentencing, you know, you're looking at the sentencing guidelines, you're looking at the mitigating factors, you know, of the person who, you know, committed the crime, of just the case in general, the client's, you know, history, what are the circumstances here, and the propensity towards recidivism or rehabilitation. So it's really a lot, but following the guidelines, but then weighing public safety and trying to make the victim whole. So it's a lot, there's a lot of factors, and I think trying to make it so that it's the same for everyone, but it's always a difficult, you know, it's a difficult piece, because not every case is the same, but you're trying to make sure that you're consistent, that you're not, and that's, I think, a lot of what the guidelines are about, that you're not, okay, this person comes in, so I'm going to cut them a break, but the next person in the exact same circumstances, I'm not going to cut them a break. You know, you can't do that. You've got to follow, you know, you've got to follow the law. You got to follow the guidelines, to the extent, you know, as I said, weighing the public safety and making the victim whole, which is, it's a tough, you know.
And that's for every that's for every person that comes in front of you.
Yep. Yes.
Pastor Burns, last question to you.
Okay. Jenny, we talked before. You've been out on the campaign trail. Any issues that have been presented on the campaign trail that kind of surprised you, caught you off guard, that you didn't think you'd be have to deal with?
This whole campaign has caught me a little off guard. You know, I guess not everything is pretty much. I mean, the issues that people care about are not surprising to me, especially mm-hmm. with the, you know, the pro-choice, pro-life thing, you know, and that being on the ballot. Actually, I'm mm-hmm. somewhat, I think that'll be, you know, that'll be on the ballot. And then I think people have stopped asking me that as much because they recognize that that's where that decision is going to be made. Mm-hmm. But the people definitely in this community have very different opinions on the issue of crime and mm-hmm. what should be done about it. So that, right. that, I don't know if it necessarily surprised me, but a lot of varying opinions on that. Mm-hmm. And that things should be tougher. Other people think it should be, you know, it's too tough. And so it's an interesting, yeah. it's interesting.
Do you find yourself having to do a lot of educating when you're going door to door with people?
Yeah, yes, some. But most people just seem to want to know. They want to know about me and, you know, and what I'm about. So
that's good though. Yes. They take an interest.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So it's been interesting. Like I said, it's I give credit to anyone who's willing to kind of. To put themselves out there and run a campaign, because it's, you know, it's not easy. It's a lot of work, and it's how our system works. You know, if you don't have people willing to run for office, yeah.
I feel all of your pain, Jenny. Trust me. All right, Jenny, we're almost time. The show is almost at an end, but tell people again who you are. Why should they run for you? How can they find out more about you? Here's that time for that shameless plug.
The shameless plug. All right. Well, I ask, you know, I'm Jenny McNeil. I'm running for circuit court judge. I'll give you my little spit. I ask for your vote because three reasons. One, integrity. I am a person of integrity. And it's not just me that will tell you that. It's the people that I work with. It's the, you know, Judge Marietti, Judge Hoekstra, Judge Ruck, a lot of judges and people in the community are behind me 100%. It's also experience. I bring over 25 years of legal experience of working hard here in Muskegon County. And I think that's important. I represented thousands of people right here in Muskegon County, all sorts, mothers, fathers, grandfathers, grandmothers, just ordinary folks I've represented here in Muskegon County. I also am very involved in the community and my commitment to the community, my willingness to spend my time and energy to make sure that with things like Muskegon Family Care, things like Every Woman's Place, I think speak to how I will be as a judge. So I ask for people to get out and vote November 8th or before. The absentee ballots, I think, are going to start going out next week. So to vote yeah, there we go. Oh, the contact information, jennyforjudge.com. That's my website. You can get right on there and ask for any information. If you want a yard sign, if you want to come knock doors with me. I love it when people come knock doors with me. I also have a Facebook page. It's McNeil for Judge. And it's McNeil and with two L's. A lot of people lop off that second L. So yeah, Jenny McNeil for Circuit Court Judge.
All right, Jenny. Thank you so much. Good luck. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care. That's Jenny McNeil running for the 14th seat. Look, it's 3:00. Our time has come. Man, it just flies, doesn't it?
It does go by quick. Good interviews today. Good conversation.
All right. We are going to, other than a couple weeks, we'll be spreading them out, but we're going to try to interview everyone that is running for office. If we don't get in touch with you, call us at 727-5007. It's the weekend. As we always say, go out and sow a seed in somebody's life. You don't know how you can make a difference. And to my brothers at Brooks and MCF, you guys take care. Have a good weekend, Pastor. I'll see you next week.
All right.